close, aren't we?
Are we?
I think. Are we? Yeah. That's good. Good All evening. Right.
Hello.
Hope you had a great weekend. Welcome to Generational Change.
It's Monday night. I'm Jen.
I'm Peter. And it's the last night of Black History Month. So I think we can both agree that the choice for the Supreme Court, there is not a lot of good things we can say about the president, but the right decision has been made.
Mr. Bandit,
good to see you.
I'm almost like hesitant to be happy about this yet. You know what I mean? I feel like I've fallen for that so many times.
Still needs to be confirmed.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to be nominated. It's another thing to actually get through.
She would actually, and this is way more important to me than the fact that she's a Black woman. Like, it's interesting. Like, yeah, I get that. But people don't realize the coolest thing about her, she would be the first justice that comes from doing criminal defense.
And is known for reducing nonviolent drug offender sentences.
Just, yeah. Like, she'd be the most people that end up are more on the prosecutorial side, or you're like Kavanaugh and Coney Island and just have no real litigation experience whatsoever.
Yeah, talk about a major step up.
Well, and that's...
What is considered the standard for the Supreme Court? I don't know.
Thurgood Marshall tried 32 cases before the Supreme Court, won all but two or three. I should know that off the top of my head, but it's impressive. And yet now we've got people that have never litigated. So yes, this woman, and yeah, actually is a college friend of a friend of mine, that she's the same age as me. And so we were, and actually she might be a year behind us, but I know that she and a friend of mine were in college together. But yeah, she will be the first criminal defense person that is in that position. And I think that's really like good.
Good evening, Tyler.
And she happens to be a Black woman. So woo-woo for you identity people.
Yeah.
I actually think that it's more important that she's defense-minded and cares about things like, you know, civil liberties, and was one of her key things was about Guantanamo.
Yeah.
And representing people that were in Guantanamo. And I respect that immensely.
And at the end of the day, if, you know, being a Black woman, the first on the Supreme Court, that should be the bonus, not the lead.
Correct.
And I think that breaking that barrier is important, but who are you breaking it with? From what I can see, from what we have seen, Mrs. Jackson seems like a pretty solid choice.
Yeah.
So,
like, I even wore my RBG dissent earrings, because I feel like whenever we're going to talk Supreme Court, I have to wear my dissent earrings. But yes, so far, so good. I'm pleased. Which doesn't excuse the Democrats for rubber stamping every single one of Trump's like friggin' crazy right wing jurists.
Yeah, well, for every 100, we get one decent one.
Right. And that we have the two previously aforementioned goons that are in the Supreme Court.
There's obviously a lot that we can talk about, and we will address what's going on in Ukraine. But the IPCC just came out with a very dire report about climate change. It looks like we are going to increase temperatures by 2 degrees.
We're all going to die.
Sorry. If things are getting really bad, at what point do we kind of put things in perspective in terms of what's important, where our focus really needs to be on a clean energy economy? That's really what we need. In so many ways, it's so obvious at this point that that's what we need, based on what's going on right now with Ukraine and Russia. The fact that we have so much foreign oil dependency, if we didn't have any type of foreign oil dependency, Putin would seriously not be able to get away with anything right now. But their one primary commodity is petroleum. And because so much of the world is still reliant on it, because corporate special interests have captured governments all over the world, we are not evolving to a clean energy economy anywhere near as fast as we need to. But every day we get a new report, from whichever organization within the science field is telling us, you better do something, you better do something. And what's so interesting is when you have the liberal communities that are always telling people, especially on the right, to trust the science regarding COVID-19. Well, sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but climate catastrophe is going to kill tens of millions more people than COVID ever could.
I could do a quick plug. We had two very good recent episodes. One, we spoke with Michael E. Mann, mm-hmm, about what's going on with climate crisis. And we also had on Dr. Paul Glick, who is a water table hydrologist specialist, mm-hmm, about what's going on with our water. So if you're interested in how we are all going to die in a quoting Jennifer Lawrence. But yeah, check those out. This is a serious problem.
It is a serious problem. And we are all going to die if we don't deal with it. I know people don't want to hear it, but at some point you have to ask yourself, why is the water so unhealthy to drink? Why is it 88 degrees before March in South Florida? Why is it that we have all of this technology readily available to convert our economy almost seamlessly into a new age energy grid? We can do these things. At some point, you have to wonder why asses are not in the streets.
Well, we know why. Because most people can't afford to do that. And that's exactly how the system has worked. So it's basically crushed, not just literally crushing labor, but crushing everybody from being able to be aware of what's going on and be in the streets because people are working three jobs just to, like, you know, tread water. That's how they, the fact that people can barely make ends meet, they don't have time to worry about protesting and stuff. They have to just keep going. They have to just keep, like, these are people just treading water.
Yeah.
And so that's why people are not in the street, because the system has beaten down our ability to have any sort of community network or support so that we can do that, which is what would be needed for a general strike. Which, I mean, like, that's ultimately what we're talking about.
I think that a general strike is probably not as far off as we would like it to be. The only problem is everyone is waiting for, like, that leader, if you will, to just come out and say, okay, follow me and this is what we're going to do. No, you need leaders everywhere.
Well,
leaders in the local community.
That is one of those things, though. I do think the capability of a general strike will be dependent on the next couple of years, what happens with labor and the PRO Act and different things regarding that community, because it could be one way or it could be another way, depending on some of that, you know, policy. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen with the idea of a general strike, like if there is somebody to lead it. But the reality is, unless there is a support network, you know, like, people need to be able to afford to not work. And you have to have systems in place. This is something we've spoken with Steve Grumbine about a few times, that in order to have the, you know, a strike like that, we have to have community support networks in place. That's something Bo also talks about. Bo, the fifth column.
You're Mr. Rogers.
He is my Mr. Rogers. I do love him. So he makes everything is extremely calm. He's very calm and very, like, just knowledgeable. It's very settling. It's sort of like, I feel like everything's fine as long as he's okay. If he starts to get upset, then I'm going to be like, shit's going to hit the fan now.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how people choose to tackle this issue, but I think it's a very vital issue that cannot be ignored right now. And we have seen over the past year and a half how liberal society has literally lost their mind regarding COVID and always saying, trust the science, trust the science, trust the science. Are you going to trust the science now and get serious about what needs to be done?
No. They don't see the connection. It requires a lot of drawing of dots, like connecting dots.
I don't think so.
Yeah, they don't understand.
I think there's a climate crisis.
We're going to war in the Ukraine. Don't you understand? That's what they're all worried about right now.
It really does. And it should put everything in perspective. You know, we always say the two biggest issues of our time is the climate crisis at the macro level and healthcare at the micro level. You know, we all should have healthcare as a right. It's the most vital part of being able to survive in society. And it's also what gives people the most amount of economic freedom based on what their job requirements are. When I hear union leaders talk about, well, you know, we negotiated this healthcare as part of our, financial pack. It's like, no. If you had universal health care, you would never have to negotiate for health care again. And you know what that means? Higher wages for your workers.
And shout out to the firefighters who have to fight about, like, which cancers are and are not covered under their health care. And yeah, that's right. There's actually a list of covered cancers. Mm-hmm. And there are specific cancers that are left off the list that are ones that firefighters are susceptible to based on the chemicals that they inhale. And they don't get coverage for those cancers. This is actually something that they have to negotiate. Yeah.
It makes you wonder.
I know exactly what it is. It's what everything is. It's de facto corruption. That's all that it is. That's all that it is. Every single thing that's wrong is just, it's de facto corruption. It's just more evidence of corruption.
I mean, at some point, people are going to have to wake up to what's going on. And I don't know how that's going to happen, how it's going to evolve.
Is Michael coming on?
Yeah, I think okay. so. I'm going to okay. message him now.
So how did we get in contact with somebody running for city commission in Bedford, New Hampshire?
Town council
in Bedford, New Hampshire. Now, how did our little show come across? Like, what is the link between our show and this candidate in New Hampshire?
Well, Carlos Cardona LeBron, as we've talked about, he ran for, was it State House, I believe? State House in New Hampshire. And he's done very well for himself. He's a good guy. He recommended that we have Mr. Strand on the show. And one of the things that we've been talking about, which I think is important, is the importance of focusing on nonpartisan races.
Yeah.
And there are three particular places that you can focus on nonpartisan races. One is city council, two is county commission, and three is school board. You do not have to affiliate with any of these political parties, which to me is vital for success.
And attention, third parties, take note.
Yeah.
That's how it's done.
And that is more than anything else, the evolution that people in the third party movement must recognize right now. There is no infrastructure for a third party, but there is an infrastructure for people who don't want to run in the two-party duopoly. And that conversation is going to happen right now with a gentleman by the name of Michael Strand, who is running for town council.
And you're going to have to tell me the link. How is it we're connected with the guy in Bedford, New Hampshire?
Didn't I just say it?
What are you talking
about? I said Mike Carlos.
Yes, but there was another link that you had told me about.
You said
he's from down here.
Oh, he's, well, actually, he's got Florida connection. He's got New Jersey connection. He's
okay,
got a lot of good stuff.
That's what I was talking about.
But he is running for a seat that doesn't require you to be in one of the two major parties. How about that? It actually can be done. Michael Strand, welcome to Generational Change.
Hey, guys.
Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
So
I'm doing well.
Right off
the bat. Appreciate you having me. Sorry for the slight delay. I had to get the rights to make sure you can use me in this not often at home Zoom setup. But being in New Hampshire right now, I will tell you that.
Yeah, the connection is a little squirrely. I don't know if that's a question of the video or the audio being on a slight delay. Is there any way to possibly adjust it in any way?
You're not getting a great connection is what it is.
Yeah, let me see. Can you guys give me 1 second here?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Take your time.
You can go and come back.
If you have to.
Yeah.
Okay. Is it any better now or no slag?
Seems a little bit better. I mean, you're clearer. The audio is clearer.
Okay. That's a start. Unfortunately, the elephant in the room for New Hampshire is a terrible cell and broadband access throughout the state. So that is an issue here. I don't doubt.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
You would think a state like New Hampshire, that wouldn't be an issue, but hey, you know, you learn something new every day. So Michael, please share with us a little bit about the seat that you're running for and the importance of local politics that in the non-corporate movement seems to be something that isn't getting the proper amount of attention if we're really trying to change the way things are done here in this country.
Sure. Well, we're in a unique state where, you know, libertarian and progressive politics tend to dominate. And, you know, I think in local races, in a perfect world, including the one, you know, that I'm running for, we would be able to get past some of the partisan stuff. And, you know, I've always thought that New Hampshire is a unique place, you know, native Floridian, of course, is a whole different can of worms. Because, you know, there are some really valid intersectionalities between libertarianism and progressivism. And, you know, I've always felt that way. You know, I was raised Republican on the southwest coast of Florida, you know, mom from New Jersey, as Peter mentioned, dad was a native Floridian in Lauderdale before 75 was built, right? And now here I am, you know, in New England, which is a long story. But, you know, I think there's something really valid and something to be said about the purest type of democracy that exists, and that is New England town-style democracy. So, you know, it's if you would have asked me that a month ago, I would not have been able to tell you about what's required to participate in that, which is hammering signs into, you know, granite frozen ground in February. But, you know, I think there are wins to be had. And, you know, as someone who struggles with this and has for a long time, I've always leaned liberal, but, you know, through a pandemic, through, you know, school board debates at this point, censorship conversations that we're having, the rollback of women's rights in New Hampshire by a libertarian right that claims to be protecting freedom is, you know, is baffling to me. So, you know, I'm trying to find areas where we can actually talk and leave the politics at the door and leave the egos at the door. And, you know, green energy is one of them, for a perfect example. You know, if we agree on, you know, the left and right, that we maybe can't trust the federal government in terms of regulations that change like the wind. And, you know, we can't trust our state government, certainly not in this state, you know, to facilitate, you know, move towards sustainable, you know, energy and the future for our kids. You know, that's why I was a little delayed. I have an 8-year-old who is very happy with you guys right now that she has to stay up later during vacation week. But, you know, solar energy is a local first solution. You know, so we're having that conversation in this town right now. You know, what does it mean to have a non-investment when you're looking at a town budget? And, you know, these things can pay for themselves in tiers. And we actually have more local freedom and autonomy, you know, than we would otherwise. So, you know, I think that's where we're at. I'm not going to claim that there's a cure-all in terms of local politics providing, you know, some avenue for a third party. But I think we have to live in the world that we're in, you know, at least for now.
Yeah. I mean, we always stress local is really where you can make the most difference. Local is where you can actually be on offense for the first time as like, you know, in Florida, especially we have this problem like Tallahassee. It's a wasteland for any Democrat, let alone a progressive. Like you want things like, you know, healthcare, that's not happening here, right? So they're always on defense. Any person that goes to Tallahassee, you're always playing defense. You're trying to make sure that the evangelical right doesn't go as far as they really want to, but we're still on defense. But at local level, you get to play offense and you get to come up with things and strategies that actually help people at a very real level. And I think that it's very satisfying. I think that's satisfying as opposed to playing defense all the time.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, I think that's where we lose something is, you know, when we're so stuck and unfortunately, you know, whether we should take this opportunity to pick on the establishment Democratic or not, you know, certainly I don't think I need to highlight where there have been both successes and failures in the state that I'm sitting in right now. But, you know, I think I look back to Florida, you know, where I was born and you guys actually, if given the opportunity, you know, have a possible revenue stream to actually fund some type of state driven universal healthcare system beyond just Medicaid, which is largely federally funded anyway. You know, New Hampshire won't even talk about a sales tax. Let alone, you know, an income. And frankly, I'm against an income tax. I'm a bad liberal sometimes, you know, growing up in a state
that's okay.
That is, you know, they'll be damned if they, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, it's true. But, you know, we often talk about the correlation between, and I hate to use labels like progressives and libertarians, but really, you know, it's moral consistency. And when you find that, it's just refreshing. So like, for example, I support the Constitution. I support our rights, all of them. That includes the second, which pisses off people on the left. But like, when you start talking about things like, you know, the eighth, the people that care about the second, they don't care so much about the eighth, right? Like, so I just try to be very consistent with that. And people like to pick and choose. But I do think there's a lot in common, and especially in rural places, when you have people where they're right, but they're populist right, they're not evangelical Christian right. And I think that's a huge thing, because these are people that are fairly live and let live people. They're not the people out trying to make sure that your daughter can't get an abortion.
Yeah. Well, there's no moral continuity, you know, more, you know, certainly not on the right. And, you know, and again, I was raised conservative. You know, we forget that, you know, the first progressive was Teddy Roosevelt. You know, the Republican Party was liberal under Lincoln. You know, were some of the first environmentalists under Teddy, although he was also a big game hunter. So we'd have to forgive him or not. But, you know, it's not so simple, I think, is my message, you know, some of the time. And, you know, I guess I wish we could have these conversations. And, you know, I had one the other day. I actually was calling a woman who is a Republican in the town where I live. And she's moderate and she's got a good person. She's got good common sense. She did a lot for public education. She's a believer in education, not trying to defund it and, you know, reallocate, you know, resources to religious organizations that aren't paying taxes anyway, which, you know, you know, I ended up calling the wrong person. She had a shared number with a person who is a Republican state rep in Bedford. We had a long conversation. She shared with me that because I had tweeted once upon a time that, you know, the city of Portsmouth was trying to vie for some level of local control in terms of not having guns in schools or having some gun-free zones, right? And she said, you know, that she had seen some message that I was, part of the reason I was running was to ban guns in Bedford. From a council level. And it's sort of like, number one, that's not even how it works. You know, number two, you know, we had an actual real conversation. She's a Republican from California and I'm a Democrat from Florida. And either really good company or really bad company. But, you know, I've always been frankly against, you know, a registry. You know, as a kid raised by a Florida redneck dad who hunter, you know, I had a rifle behind the backseat of my truck at one point. I've never owned handguns because my mom was utterly against them. But, you know, against a register in hand, not for handguns on the other. You know, the Constitution is pretty straightforward, you know, when it comes to the Second Amendment. You can't really regulate possession or you're not supposed to, but there could be loopholes. But you certainly can regulate sales, right? And this is where, you know, I was open with her about my opinions and I think she appreciated it. I said that the right has gone too far in saying that the Second Amendment means you can't regulate sale. You know, we have a long precedent in history. You can regulate sales of anything in this country. And right. That's something that would be viable and constitutional that we're not even allowed to talk about, you know, now.
Because they're all about bans and mandates. These are people that like to legislate out of fear and they tend to make policy decisions based on their feelings. And when you do that, that's not necessarily using reason and facts. And bans don't work. Even banning assault weapons won't work. And it's just not, it doesn't solve the issue and that ship sailed. So I think bans don't work and I don't think mandates work. I think, you know, this is where I get very libertarian.
What in U.S. history would tell you that bans and mandates don't work? I can't imagine.
And I think that this is the intersection between progressives and libertarians that we talk about on our podcast constantly. You know, we are friends with Andrew Yang. And, you know, one of the things that we pointed out that he pointed out specifically on our show is that when it comes to progressives, we can agree, he said, on 20 issues, but if the 21st issue is incorrect, then that's it. You're basically excommunicated, if you will.
You're canceled.
And so that is the next evolution of this movement that must happen because the Puritan, and when people, there's a huge difference between corporate backed individuals talking about Puritan politics versus non-corporate people talking about Puritan politics. People who are corporate that talk about Puritan politics are doing it for a career motive. Whereas people who are doing it that are non-corporate are seeing the forest through the trees. That's what we see. We recognize that progressives and libertarians in particular have a lot in common politically. Even if they differ on a number of economic issues, but civil liberties, war, even healthcare, There are a lot of similarities that are there, and we have to work with them. That's why New Hampshire is such an interesting state, because it is a combination of rugged progressivism, but also traditional libertarianism. It's, you know, it's the Granite State. It's a state that is regarded as being one of the best run in the United States. And I think because of the fact that there is this healthy relationship between the progressive and libertarian factions, that that is why a lot of positive things usually come from New Hampshire. So from your perspective, and we talk about this a lot, there are a lot of people who are just completely fed up with the two-party duopoly. They don't want anything to do with it anymore. They are tired of this red-blue divide, left-right divide, whatever you want to call it. The idea of running for local races that are nonpartisan, I think, could attract a lot of attention in the overall non-corporate movement. How do you see that?
I'm mixed right now. So I will say that I came into this race in good faith, you know, knowing that when I have one-on-one conversations with people, you know, as often as I get to, you know, we tend to agree on far more than we don't, you know, and I, you know, call me, you know, maybe naive or too much, you know, an idealist, but, you know, I tend to think that human beings agree on upwards of 80, potentially even 90% when it comes to fundamental values. We really allow, you know, vested interests and self-interested people who have a lot of power and money to make sure we get in our own way. I would agree with that. And I appreciate the, you know, the love for, you know, for New Hampshire, but I think the one thing that needs to be acknowledged, you know, in this state is that we do have a very corporatocratic, unfortunately, Democratic Party, you know, at the federal delegative level, and that's not going to make me any friends if anybody watches this, but I'll say it anyway. And on the right, you know, unfortunately, you have a lot of these libertarian-oriented organizations, from Fruits to others, are actually, you know, they're Koch brothers founded. You know, the first group who, you know, was monitoring my Twitter account was Americans for Prosperity. You know, when I threw my name in the hat. So I'm battling, you know, to ensure I can cut through the noise and actually have real conversations with people and go, listen, yeah, I got involved in Democratic politics first. And, you know, now I want to put my name on a ballot. And it's not because I have some self-interest or agenda, even in local first politics. And unfortunately, not everybody is willing to believe that, but, you know, I think when you tend to be unfiltered and tell the truth to a fault, people come around, you know, even if it's slowly, but surely.
You get more quality people, and you get people that will respect you and that will be more inclined to actually not just support you, but kind of join your mission. You don't just have people that are, it builds a bigger movement when you do it that way, when you're just authentic and organic. And I have to say, I have never been to New Hampshire. However, I am going to be there for the first time in August. So, yeah, so that's kind of exciting. You know,
really?
I've never been. Yes, I am. So I'm very excited about that. But
well, maybe you'll go lend a hand with Michael's
kid. Well, when is your
We got to get together then. If we have the so the in literally a week. So Tuesday, March 8th.
Okay,
so
and how can people
stretch,
help?
That's for sure.
How can people help you right now?
Yeah, I mean, you know, honestly, it's, you know, if I could clone myself times 10, so I could knock on more doors and talk to more voters, that'd be the best way. So any cloning technology, please send it away. We can set it up in my apartment. You know, beyond that, you know, it's, you know, I hate to talk money because, you know, we, whatever, or non-progressives, whatever the hell you want to call us. So, you know, we hate it, but it's real. You know, I mostly self-funded this thing. I'm trying to get a mailer out to combat, you know, a mailer that I understand is going out from a couple organizations that claim to be nonpartisan and are the furthest thing from it. Right. So that's happening this week. So, you know, if you're willing, I'd love to give you, you know, it's a PayPal link because it's a local race, but
sure.
If you're willing to throw that out there, I would not say no.
Yeah, no, we'll put it up. What you do?
Go for it.
What is it?
Yeah, I can let me send it to you right now because it's a lot of
jumps. Yeah,
send it in the chat.
Yeah, guys, these are the kinds of races that really are going to make people's lives better when you start supporting local races. Like, we can all sit here and argue about the fact as to whether or not it'll be Trump or DeSantis or, you know, whether it'll be Manchurian candidate Pete for the Dems. And really, we can expect, but for most people, their lives, it doesn't really matter as to any of those people because the corporations are still in charge. So what we can do at a local level is actually have people that are trying to make our lives better. So, and the more it happens in other places, the more it might happen near you. I mean, we're all the way at the tip of the flaccid penis of the country and we're like not getting it anytime soon.
No.
So, but in other places, it can happen.
Well, let's not discount what we could do in Florida. I just think that our priorities are not,
we're a hot mess,
being focused on. And Carlos would like you to come by and say hello when you're in New Hampshire. So hopefully we could set that up.
I will. I'm actually going to be on a family vacation. My family, we're doing driving from Boston to Acadia and then back around. So I actually was in the process of figuring out where in New Hampshire I'm going to go. Because I'm not going to drive by New Hampshire and not go there. You know, it's like, add it to the states I've been to.
And it's true. These local races, a few bucks really does go a long way.
Hey, we're not giving up on Florida. We didn't get to talk about.
So you're from where on the West Coast?
And I have better internet access.
Yeah. Where are you from on the West Coast? Now you don't have audio.
I think the audio's kicking out.
Yeah.
See if that might be.
I grew up in Sarasota.
Oh, there. Okay.
I grew up in Sarasota. And, you know, side note, one of these days we have to figure out how to displace. Oh, did we lose it?
No, we can hear you.
We can hear you. Yeah.
I don't know about that. You can hear, I grew up in Sarasota. So side note, you know, Vern Buchanan, before he retires from his term interest, would be a friend of mine.
Oh, there's a lot of changes that we need to make. And, you know, again, when we talk about the GOP, there is a huge difference of what the GOP is in a state like New Hampshire versus a state like Florida. And that is something that I think people really need to understand. When it comes to politics, this is still a deep South state. And, you know, we just with some of the recent legislation that we've seen, you know, you want to talk about some of those people that really do make it difficult to evolve. It is a problem. But Michael, if you have that PayPal, if we could put up for you, if you want to just. Okay, I see it. You just texted it.
Yeah,
he
texted it to you.
Let me see.
Sorry about that, guys. I'm not a believer in my connection right now. To try and
open. No, it's okay. It's all good. We're gonna put this up so people can help you out.
Actually, if you're Michael, are you able to put that in the chat?
You can put it in the chat.
Post it in the comment, and we'll put it right up.
So I was trying to do that, but the second that I open another window, lose my audio, I think is what happened before. We've actually been fighting over this internet issue in this entire Senate district for about 5 years. And they turn down federally sometimes because, apparently we are unwilling to take money from the federal government, even when a public-private partnership match happens. So that's a whole different can of worms. But
Carlos, if you can put that in the chat, because I can't read it out. If you could do that for us, that would be huge. And we will put that up, as soon as you can. It is a PayPal link. I can't read it out fully. So with that said, I think that it's immensely important that we do focus on these local races. We start building this foundation at the local level that is ultimately going to be what makes the difference in the long run. If we have any hope of taking back our country from the clutches of corporate special interest control over our government, because that is what we face. And hell, you know, we even face it locally, which is obviously a big deal. But Michael, we're obviously very grateful you came on this evening. We certainly look forward to continuing this conversation. Sorry, the internet connection's been tough, but we definitely got the good audio, and that'll also go up on Spotify and Apple, the Apple podcast as well. And definitely check them out. If you can throw Michael a few bucks, it would obviously be a huge help. And we appreciate you coming on this evening.
It was nice to meet you.
Yeah, I pray you guys. I appreciate you guys' patience, by the way. So we'll, let's do this again. Usually I Zoom from my office. If we didn't, do too badly, I'd love to talk. And we got to talk more about Florida, especially South Florida.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have you back. Good luck next week.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you very much. I will need it. I think it's going to be really close, but we're putting the work in, and I'm really interested to see what the outcome is.
Awesome.
Absolutely, Michael. Have a great evening, and we will be in touch.
Bye.
All right. Take care. You guys too. Thanks.
Our pleasure. So needless to say, our focus, as we've talked about, really needs to come to these local spots.
Yeah.
Because they are neglected, and he really hasn't raised much money.
See, that would be a great candidate for our PAC to support. Hmm. We're actually having a PAC, and I've talked about this. And it's and really the goal is going to be to, I mean, one of the things we like is the idea of nonpartisan races around the country and just supporting people that are, you know, representing their communities.
Guys, please smash that like button and share this live stream. Obviously, we are just getting started. And in a few minutes, we're going to have Owen Higgins, journalist, most of you probably know. We're going to be talking about what's going on in Ukraine. And he had the opportunity to chat with a recent friend of the show, Sam Sachs, about what is really, really going on. But again, most of this is kind of irrelevant when you think about what the IPCC is saying about the environment. You know, we have to recognize that there are these circumstances that... Hi, Alicia. Matt, great to see you guys.
Okay, so I wanted to point out, though, in doing the graphic for this show, that you know somebody is actually like an on-the-ground, getting information type reporter person when they don't have headshots. And it's the same thing like when I do the graphics for Bo. Bo has no headshots. There's no headshots of Bo. You know, even when he was doing field reporting, there's no headshot.
No, of course.
Right. So it's just like, those are always the hardest people to do a graphic of. They don't, you know, anyway, that was something that I noticed.
Oh, I think that, well, he wears the sunglasses at night or during the day or something.
That was there was the only picture of him without sunglasses. It would have been where the top of the head is cut off, which I hate when photographers do that because for people who use pictures, it's not good.
We want to let you guys know what's coming up. Wednesday, obviously, a very good friend of the show returning once again for the third time. Tom Hartman is coming on. What is he coming on to talk about, Jen?
The hidden history of Big Brother. I kid you not, this stuff is nightmare inducing. Mm-hmm. It really is. Of all the Tom Hartman, we've had hidden history of oligarchy, we've had hidden history of healthcare. It's a whole series. I highly recommend it. It's very user-friendly. It's very like bits of history mixed in with what's happening now and why it's happening now based on history. It's really good. But the Big Brother one, I must say, it's like I knew some of this stuff, but the extent to which we're being like followed in terms of our data, mm-hmm. not like I don't think people are actually watching me. Although they could be too. They could be too. We have that capability.
Watching me.
I mean, we do, but I just don't think anybody's that interested in me. But
they are.
Oh yeah. The data collection is really what it's just really scary.
And as friend of the show, Andrew Yang would say,
we should be getting paid for it.
Yeah.
That's one of those really kind of, it's kind of a riding the horse in the direction it's going approach. That is something that I do appreciate.
Very important. And then, of course, the other guest that we're going to be having is not a candidate, but somebody who was a candidate and is a very important activist.
CIA, don't you remember?
Okay. You remember. There you go. Well, okay. A little slow on the uptake, Allie. I'm sorry. But one thing that is very important about the other guest that's coming on, his name is C.J. Peterson, and he is an important fixture within the Iowa Democratic Party. And
Iowa's all kinds of important and messed up. Like Iowa's caucusing states, it's a whole different animal.
And since we're talking about what the IPCC has said about the environment, the Iowa Democratic Party refused to take a vote on banning fracking in the state of Iowa. I don't know. I would say that that's a pretty serious issue not to be taking up on, wouldn't you say?
This is that joint, the pre-rolled that I got from that weed truck down in Wynwood. For people who don't know, there's weed trucks in Wynwood. How it's legal, I can't quite figure it out. I don't know. I have a medical card, but they don't ask. And basically they're selling recreational weed out of a weed truck in open, broad daylight. There's police there. It's completely legal. And they're taking credit cards, which if anybody can answer me how that's possible in the state of Florida, please, by all means, let me know. But they have a lot of good stuff. And I don't normally smoke joints. Like I don't normally, because I can't roll for shit. And I actually don't love the flavor of the paper, but I really wanted to try this and it came this way. So as opposed to dissecting it, I'm just going to smoke it. That's well, the moral whatever. Of the story is it came from the weed truck. There is a weed truck, multiple weed trucks. One's called Weedsies.
Well, whatever works for you, I think is obviously going to be the easiest way to do this.
Whatever works
but
for
I'm
me.
But I'm going to get even more high from secondhand smoke coming from you.
Well, this thing's like thick. It's almost like I feel like I'm like cleansing with a sage brush.
Well, and you know, you also bought something off the street. So there is no question that this is going to be very interesting. Jeez Louise.
You say like, it off the street. It was a business on a truck.
Yeah, well.
You were there.
I don't know if I trust that joint. I think it's very...
it's because you're not used to seeing me smoking a joint.
No, you're not a joint smoker. You're a bullet smoker.
I'm a bullet smoker. Actually, I'm really a water pipe smoker, but in travel mode, I am a bullet smoker. Yes, but well, I've always been and will always really be a water pipe girl.
Fair enough. Well, as you guys know, we have a very important guest coming on. He is a former journalist with The Intercept. He is freelance and he does fantastic work. And he obviously knows a thing or two about the BS that we deal with on a daily basis in politics. And of course, not being distracted from all the nonsense would be a wonderful thing to talk about, especially regarding the Ukraine-Russia war that is happening right now. Owen Higgins, welcome to Generational Change.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So it's a perfect place to start because obviously I'm sure you saw the IPCC report about the environment, what's going on right now. And of course, nobody provides a bigger carbon footprint to the world than the military industrial complex. So please share with us what, you know, obviously following up your conversation with friend of the show, Sam Sachs from earlier today, and what the current state of affairs are right now. On the one hand, we get the report that Putin is putting his nuclear people on alert. And then on the other hand, we hear that there are potential ceasefire talks happening at the same time. So based on your intel and what you've been researching, what do you see as the current state of affairs regarding the Ukraine crisis?
Poof, man. I mean, it changes so quickly. You guys can hear me, right?
We can hear you, but I'm just going at this with the presumption of we're being lied to. So let's start with that and go from there.
I think that let me gather my thoughts. I think that if you look at it in context, you know, this is the result of decades of tension between Russia and the West. NATO expansion has not helped. Russian actions have not helped either. I mean, like, these are two superpower forces, basically, kind of coming together with Eastern Europe caught in the crossfire. And the actions that Russia took last week, almost like a week ago now, to invade Ukraine and basically try and take over the entire country, which is what they're trying to do now, that's a huge escalation of an already really tense situation. So I don't know. Where do you feel like you're being lied to, I guess?
Well, for one, I just happened to catch a clip that Peter had forwarded me today that was on The Rising that Kim Iverson did, where she fact-checked a bunch of things that have been out, whether it's stories or pictures or, you know, anecdotes of all the horrible things that are happening. And she debunked all of them, like either it was an old picture or it was, you know, and that's the problem. And what we're getting here, especially people that watch our mainstream narrative, it's like you're either hearing somebody beating a war drum you know, or they're just, I mean, I don't, it's just, I just feel like we're not getting accurate information.
And then to top it off, you've got people on, you know, like Trump's side in particular that are cheering on Putin. It's like, at what point does this become like, nuts. It just becomes this whole, can we figure out a way to put a partisan lens on every single thing going on? That's what it
seems. Right. I mean, I think there is a lot of propaganda coming out of both sides. We talked about this a lot on the show today, just about how both sides are obviously propagandizing their audiences a lot. But I think a lot of it is, I don't really know if like this is the right exact wording, but it's kind of like some of it can be really organic, where you have something like, you know, I'm not talking about any of like the specifics that anybody may have like debunked or something like that, but like, you know, something happens, a little urban legend starts because it's a place of like heightened tension and war. And then you like put in social media and the, like the way the information is shared now, and things just kind of explode from there. I think like the ghost of Kiev was something that people were talking about a lot today. That looks like the Snake Island thing looks like it's not true. Snake Island looks like it's just like that was just straight up manufactured propaganda. Don't know by who, but it was certainly taken advantage of, obviously, by the Ukrainian government, who I think at this point need any attention that they can get. I mean, they need to keep the world's attention on them. So they're obviously going to keep, but you know, like propaganda takes other forms too. Like there's like Zelensky doing his video where he's like standing outside of, right, of the building with like his guy, his ministers. And that's of course not like a lie, like he is there, but that's a very effective propaganda technique to show that he is still there. So I think that there's a lot of that going on, you know, like obviously in Russia, people are still being told that it's just like a limited peacekeeping operation that is being done in Donetsk. So there's a lot of misinformation spreading around, but as far as like the basic facts of the conflict are really not in question, right? Like this is Russia invaded Ukraine. They are trying to basically just decapitate the entire state, essentially. And what their end goal is a little difficult to really know, but obviously they don't want the government that is in power right now to be in power, and they want something more friendly, whether it's something where they are, you know, then in power, they're just completely in control, or if it's just like a puppet state. But either way, I mean, that's what they're going for. And that's really, I think, the real issue that we need to be kind of like that. Those are the facts. What you're being lied to about, like there's a lot of propaganda, but the basic facts are, I don't think, are really in dispute.
My biggest issue with this is really not to do whataboutism, because I do think it's not okay for somebody to invade a nation. Like that's not okay to do that. I'm opposed to it. But I kind of feel like, where do we get off? If we had a country neighboring us that was in a vulnerable position, like those two parts of the Ukraine, from my understanding, or that were have any sort of sympathy for Russia, if we had something similar to like that, we would have had slave labor camps there like 10 years back and justified it in some way. Like I feel like we are the most imperialist bullies in the world. And so for people to get holier than thou with this and be like, oh, Putin's such a bad guy, it's like, yeah, he's an imperialist, he's a capitalist, but I find it really frustrating. Right. I don't know if I express that properly.
I think that I got that. I think that like a good way to look at this is, you know, Ukraine is basically being fought over by the U.S. Not by the U.S., but by like the West as a whole, and Ukraine on the other side, right? So, so yeah, they're like, so in 2014, the government changes over to be more pro-Western in something that a lot of people have described as a coup, than the breakaway regions in Donetsk, you know, say that they want to go to Russia. Hey, you know, maybe they do, maybe they don't. You know, like maybe the majority of people do, maybe they don't. That's kind of irrelevant to what's really going on, which is just these two great powers are just kind of playing with this country. They're pushing it back and forth between the two of them. So I think that the reason that this is such a big deal is that it, by invading, what Russia has essentially done is to upend like 70 years of basically like a status quo between it and the West. Like even after the Cold War, even after the USSR collapsed, like that kind of like detente kind of reasserted itself. An invasion war of conquest of this type hasn't been seen in a really long time. So I think that's why people are kind of freaking out about it. As far as like, where does the U.S. get off? I mean, like, obviously the U.S. has no moral standing to lecture any other country about what it does. Of course. Like, there's no question about that. That doesn't necessarily mean that all of their criticisms are in a vacuum wrong, right? Like in a vacuum, sure. Yeah. Like maybe they're right. Is the hypocrisy a little bit difficult to take? Yeah, I mean, it is. And I think that I think that we saw a lot of that in the media coverage of this conflict, where like of the war so far, where, you know, people are talking about this as if it's like this level of war is like a unique situation, when obviously it's not. Many other parts of the world go through the same thing. As far as like the actual reality of violence, it's not particularly unique. What is unique about it is the like geopolitical kind of ramifications of it, if that makes sense.
We're speaking with Owen Higgins, freelance journalist, in regards to what is current status of Ukraine and Russia with the war that is going on in Eastern Europe. I think that one of the things that struck me, and I'm sure struck you, Jen, today, which is somewhat completely unheard of, is the fact that Switzerland decided to get involved, and they never get involved in anything. And the fact that they now say to Putin that we are freezing Russian assets in their Swiss banking system, I mean, that's really serious stuff. And what I worry about, and what I think, Jen, you would agree with, is Putin is a madman, and he is somebody who, if you squeeze him too tight, you know, you have to wonder how far is he willing to go? I think that that's a question when you think about economic sanctions regarding Russia right now, and of course, the looming issue of where does China fit into this? What do you see happening regarding economic sanctions? Do you see that as being the end game, that eventually it will just become too overwhelming for Russia to deal with, that they'll have to back off? What do you see?
Well, I think the reason that Switzerland got involved again is what I was referring to by this kind of like just upending of the established order for decades, right? Like, I think that is the major reason for Switzerland getting involved, because they just want to like just stop this shit now before things get any worse, or, you know, the war expands. I think that's kind of I'm sure that there are a lot of elements of Russian government and society that also want that. We've seen a lot of oligarchical members of society there, and members of the government who are like speaking out against war, which is not like something that you would normally see there. So I think that's the reason for that. As far as Putin being a madman, I mean, he's acting irrational, certainly, in some ways. I mean, he's certainly making like a lot of big threats. Does that mean that he's so insane that he's going to start launching nukes? I don't know. I was certainly a lot more worried about the situation over there as far as like nuclear weapons went, probably like 24 hours ago. I would agree with this comment.
Yeah,
I
mean, that's the thing.
Their economy is crashing. Their economy is crashing, and that's and they're doing this intentionally. As far as debating the efficacy or morality of sanctions is a separate question, but the economic war that is going on is having like a serious effect. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't really know what the end game is here at this point for Putin.
Yeah.
I think like you were saying, you know, a friend of your show, a friend of my show, Sam Sachs, definitely said, I thought this was really sharp. He said today that, that you know, like we need just need to have off ramps for people here because like we need to establish a way for Putin and for Russia to
both sides to
de-escalate. Safe. Yeah, it in a way that's not humiliating. And anyone who thinks that this war is like done and he doesn't have a chance to win it. I mean, like, look, Russia could flatten Ukraine if they wanted to. Like, there's no question about that. They have one of the most powerful militaries on the planet. It would be over very quickly if they really wanted to like use like their full force, which they have not done yet. Like, if they want to just use their full force, they would just roll Ukraine. I mean, it'd be over very, very quickly with probably hundreds of thousands or millions of deaths. Obviously they don't want to do that for a number of reasons, probably, you know, like I think domestically it would be a disaster to kill that many people who have family in Russia. Internationally it'd be a disaster because they'd be pariahs for decades. But they could. So they're like, if, unless they want to disengage, they probably, there's just really no way that they would lose the war. So what you really want to do is you want to find a way to de-escalate and make it so that like it doesn't get more intense, if that makes sense.
I think that's a great point. And I think that to me, more than anything else, if, as an objective observer, because I can't stand the partisan nonsense regarding this, the way that, you know, you have one side, particularly on the Democratic side, that want to blow as much smoke up Biden's ass as they possibly can. And then you have people on the other side who are trying to make it seem like, you know, Trump knows everything. It's like, no, I don't need any of that crap. And neither should anybody be paying attention to that aspect of what's going on. What is important to recognize, as you just pointed out, is what is the off-ramp exit that Sam Sachs had alluded to? Because the only way this is really going to de-escalate is if Putin can save face in some way, shape, or form. If that is not on the table, then I could see this getting a lot worse. And I almost feel like it's a kicking of the hornet's nest type thing when people are constantly trying to dunk on Putin. It's like, that's really not smart. I really don't think that that's going to win you more friends. I think it's only going to make this thing more. This is such a tenuous situation that we really don't know what's going to come of it.
He's the dark triad. He has definitely, we've talked about the dark triad traits in leaders, and he definitely exhibits the dark triad of traits. It's narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy.
But what I think is a great place to transition to, Owen, is, you know, you probably saw this just came out a few hours ago about the IPCC report about the devastating effects of climate change, just how much worse this is going to get. I would think right now.
Can I just say just one more thing just about the off ramp, which is just, you know, a good comparison for people in the U.S. to make to this is, you know, long after it was clear that the U.S. had lost the Iraq war, multiple times they were asked to leave by the Iraqis. Multiple times there was like an off ramp to end the war, and Bush and Obama alike just would not do it. And there's really no logical reason for that, other than not wanting to lose face. So they're not so different. What I'm trying to say. But sorry, you were saying about the IPCC.
I think I saw something earlier that said this is like Iraq 2.0, and I agree. I think right now it is painfully clear, especially with, you know, petroleum prices being what they are, we see how much, if not overwhelmingly, the amount of Russia's economy is dependent upon petroleum. And right now, we know that the military-industrial complex creates the biggest carbon footprint by far.
Yep.
If we're ever going to have this sort of aha moment as a collective world, not just a collective nation, I would think right now is the time to really be hammering home the need to transition to a clean energy economy for a multitude of reasons, not the least of which is if you want to end this BS that's going on and avert any of these sort of disasters going forward, that would be one thing. And then, of course, on the other end, you also have the economic benefits of doing it. And then if that's not enough, you know, all we've been hearing for the last year and a half from, especially from the liberal classes, trust the science, trust the science, trust the science. Well, the science is telling you right now that if you think COVID's bad, this is 10 times worse, and you better wake up to it because we're kind of running out of time. And so I'm thinking if there ever was a moment for us to really focus on the environmental movement and the vitality of it at this time, I would think would be right now. How do you see it?
Well, hello, dog, first of all.
She's a little needy. I'm sorry. It's Lulu. She's a little needy.
No, she's great. She's great. Yeah, I mean, like that report's quite disturbing, especially, you know, like the underlying message that we're not doing enough to like even adapt to what's coming is quite terrifying and quite scary. But I mean, it's difficult at this stage, you know, talking about what we were just talking about, to like see the military industrial complex reducing at all at this point. I mean, like this is going to put us on a new Cold War footing where we're just going to be stuck. Well, by we, I mean the people, not the governments. The governments could obviously choose not to do this, but the people are going to be stuck just in this state of kind of ambient conflict for the foreseeable future now. I mean, I don't know, like it's like that like proverb, like may you live in interesting times. I mean, like, you know, it's like we have like possible World War III, a pandemic, and then this, you know, the climate crisis just getting worse and worse. As far as like the ruling party is not going to do anything about it. The Democrats have no interest in actually, dealing with this, or not enough of them do. The GOP is going to take the House and probably the Senate in 2022, unless there's some sort of Democratic miracle. So then you have, you know, which like, you know, so the right and they're not, festive. They're not, yeah, they're not particularly sympathetic to the climate crisis, the GOP. So that's like, you know, like that's not going to happen. So we're looking at another wasted 4 years. And then God only knows what happens in 2024. So I hate to like blackpill the conversation here, but it's kind of like, yeah, like the IPCC report sucks. I don't really know what to say. I don't have anything hopeful to say. I mean, like,
no, and I don't think it matters Democrats or Republicans, because if you're on the payroll for the military industrial complex, the fossil fuel industry, you're not going to do anything about the problem. You're just not. And it doesn't matter if there's an R or a D next to your name. And that's, I think that it all comes back to that. If we don't get the corporate money out, we're nothing is going to happen. Like, we're just going to just keep circling a drain, and people are going to represent the 1% oligarchs. And we're all just going to basically sit here and go down with the ship. And literally we will in Florida, literally. Yeah. We're going to be underwater. Yeah. Here.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys are in trouble for sure. I mean, like, yeah. it's very flat. It was underwater, like within, geologically, a pretty short period of time ago, right? I mean,
it shouldn't be a place. Like, actually, what happened is everything south of Lake Okeechobee used to just be Everglades. It was all continuous rushing water through like the reeds, right? Like, just the thing. And people came in and thought, oh, we could live here. It looks good. And they dredged it and built man-made canals and built up the land and filled it in with soil that plants don't really like, because it's not anything real. Like, this is why things don't, it's really interesting when you see how Mother Nature is eventually going to decide that she's done with us and be like, yeah, bye-bye. And everything south of Lake Okeechobee will once again be water running through the reeds. That's what I think.
Yeah, well, nobody, I mean, go ahead.
And I was just saying that, and it's like, you know, unfortunately, when the state party is run by Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you know, you've really got a really serious problem that nobody is sounding the alarm. Nobody is actually saying this is a massive crisis that has to be dealt with. And ironically enough, you know, DeSantis has actually been pretty good regarding Everglades restoration.
Yeah.
But it's not enough. We still have a significant problem with Big Sugar dominating the agriculture industry.
And they are one of the big sponsors of the state Democratic Party. And none of our representatives, none of our representatives take a real stand on climate. And yet we're in Florida.
And then on top of obviously, you know, NextEra Energy, they, you know, control the Keystone XL pipeline. Well, one of their subsidiaries is Florida Power and Light. And in the state of Florida, we have an energy monopoly. So anything that goes like right now, the Florida GOP, which obviously has a supermajority in, you know, Tallahassee, they're trying to basically render solar panels on roofs like non-existent. So that's the type of nonsense.
They're discouraging. Yeah. They're trying to now discourage rooftop solar.
I just, you know, again, it's like, it's funny. Yeah. It's like life is imitating art. It's like we're looking at the movie Don't Look Up and we're thinking,
we live that.
Wow, we're really living this, aren't we? Like we're really living through it at this moment. That's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty discouraging. You know, climate isn't one of my main focuses, and it's not really something that I report on too much anymore, but yeah. It is in most of the reporting I think on climate that I've done has been mostly about big storms, like, you know, like Harvey, and I can't remember what the other one was, but there was like one, like the like those Sandy. Storms and what's that?
Sandy, Hurricane Sandy. New Jersey.
Sandy. Yeah. Yeah. So like, I think that the problem is very clear. I mean, this is, I think, I don't know if this is corporate money or if it's just a problem with the political system period, or it's probably some kind of combination, of the two plus a whole bunch of other things. But you know, It's just very difficult to see, again, like any kind of way forward, not only on this issue, but on so many issues. When polling comes out repeatedly where it's like, you know, like over 50% of Americans, like today, you know, over 50% of Americans want people to continue to wear masks in public, right? In public places. The reason I'm bringing that up is because the White House, you know, like the CDC's new guidelines were all of a sudden like nothing is transmission, even though everything was before, right? It's obvious that they're doing this for political reasons, but they're doing it for political reasons to appeal to people who don't give a fuck. Like these people are not going to like ever vote for you. And who cares what they say? They're not the majority of the country. Who gives a shit? It doesn't matter. But these political minorities are, loud, and so they get in people's heads and they make them think that like they like they have some sort of influence, like the majority of the country wants the federal government to do something about the climate crisis or keep the child tax credit or any number of policies, right, that seem pretty much like no-brainers are just rejected out of hand, and I think part of it is like corporate money and that kind of stuff. But I think a lot of it too is just there's this thought from political leaders that the people are a lot more conservative than they are. And so that just kind of like keeps things stuck in this. It's just like this kind of self-perpetuating cycle.
It
sucks.
Yeah, I call it
a pretty shitty situation.
Yeah, I call it our non-functioning republic. We're a completely non-functioning republic. You live in a republic that's supposedly a majority rule democracy type situation, that's at least supposed to be the premise. And you have the majority of the country wants X, and yet X doesn't happen. That's a non-functioning republic. So because otherwise our policy would reflect what we want, and it doesn't. So we know that. I mean, it reflects the will of either religious minorities or corporate interests or, you know, very few oligarch people and everybody else just sort of fights for scraps. But if this were functioning, we would have single payer healthcare. We would have legalized cannabis. We wouldn't be getting involved in more wars. Like most people are in clear alignment on these issues, and yet that doesn't happen.
And I think and I think this is a very good place to wind down the conversation on a very important topic. You know, I think I remember you were in Chicago. I was in Chicago for the People's Summit in 2017. And at the time, there were...
There
was several thousand people that were there. And I'm thinking, you know, what has happened to the movement, the progressive movement since that time? It's very scattered. Obviously, there's a lot of, issues amongst the ranks, especially with a lot of these podcasters
and ridiculous infighting.
And so I'm curious from your perspective, Owen, because there's a lot of people out there who want to be active, who want to be involved. They realize the circumstances are really bad. But the question is, you know, what is going to excite the most people in the quickest way possible? I mean, we think that focusing, if it's electoral politics, you know, we really think we need to sort of take on that identity that the GOP does, which is local, local, local. Focus on non-corporate races, city commission, city council, county commission,
nonpartisan races,
school board, and obviously focus on causes like ballot initiatives, things like that. What do you see? And if you were going to put the hat on and say, all right, this is what I would do right now to try to rally the troops again within the left movement, because I know it's all about, yeah, we want to have like this person running for president and all that. Yeah, but that's not sustainable. So what would you see as being the way to kind of, you know, unite the most people right now when it seems like, as you like to say, nomads in the desert?
They're nomads wandering the desert, wandering aimlessly, waiting for manna from heaven.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I just to be clear, I wasn't at the People's Summit.
Oh, okay.
I think that in a lot of ways, the progressive movement, as far as it existed in 2017, is a much stronger now in 2022. I mean, electorally, I don't think that there are progressives and democratic socialists and lefty or, you know, liberal Democrats like Bernie up and down, you know, from the Senate all the way down to state and local races. Obviously, I think there has to be more of that. I think that as far as it's fractious, a lot of that, I think, is online stuff. A lot of it too, I think is, I mean, I certainly have like a large number of feuds. I'm not saying that I don't, you know, like I like, like, but there are a number of people who are using their position in the left movement to kind of perpetuate and to kind of support kind of right-wing causes, which you kind of have to watch out for that. You kind of have to watch out for people doing that. Anyway, that's my little soapbox about that. As far as like getting people more involved, I think the local idea is pretty smart. I think people should continue to do that. If you want to have electoral power, that's what you have to do. I would honestly though say that probably like the biggest thing that's going on right now is that the GOP is like going full steam ahead, super hard to get people into positions of local and state power where they can determine how votes are counted. That shit is real. Like that shit is very dangerous because of, you know, the way that the party has been since Trump and especially since like the January 6th riot. It's very clear that, I mean, they've explicitly said, we're not losing the next presidential election. And like, they're not saying like, we're not going to lose it. They're just saying, we're not going to lose it. If you understand, I feel what like,
yeah, but, and the Democrats, at least for us, like state and local, they have no plan to do anything about this.
Oh yeah.
They're very complacent.
Yeah.
They're fairly complacent. They have been. Yeah. Although I would like to, while I'm thinking about it, shout out to a friend of the show, Michael Owens, who was running for Secretary of State in the state of Georgia, where a lot of this nonsense was occurring. And so it would be really nice to have a progressive in charge of electoral politics in the state of Georgia. So just thought I would
like throw that out there. Georgia, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Texas, Arizona, North Carolina. I mean, like these are the states that they're pushing that for. I would say that it's really important to, if you're interested in making electoral change, make sure that that electoral change doesn't happen, because then that means that, because if that shit goes through, sorry if I'm cursing too much.
No, it's okay. That shit sailed on the show a long time ago.
Okay, great, great, great. Right. So if that shit goes through, you're then looking at a situation where it doesn't matter what you run for. You're not going to get there. And once in the medium worst to worst case scenario, as a result of this, the first people that they're going to go after are not going to be like the liberals. Like, it's going to be people like the progressives and people on the left. So this is like kind of like an existential moment. So if you're interested in electoral politics, I would say that's the way to go. I mean, I don't know, like my activism days and all that stuff came up through like, you know, like the Bush protests, the anti-war protests, dealing with the white nationalist movement when it was still pretty fringe. I mean, it's still extremely dangerous, but like fringe. This is a really long time ago. This stuff, I mean, I report on this stuff now, so it's a little bit different. So my understanding of like what's the right thing to do for people to get out there and organize is different. But I think what I would say is that the stuff that I was active against and protesting against back then and working and organizing against back then has only gotten more intensely bad.
Yeah, so there's no question that we are in a very difficult place right now. But the thing that, you know, we talk about that we like to do on the podcast is try to build as wide of a coalition as we possibly can. You know, we, you know, appreciate somebody who is as far left as Kashama Sawant. We appreciate somebody who is more moderate, even libertarian, like an Andrew Yang. The way we see it.
We had Colonel Manis on the show last week. He's our furthest right guest that we've had.
But you'd be shocked at how much of an agreement there was on major issues.
Yes.
Because the truth is, we're really not that different. You know, the more we segment ourselves, the more we find ways to not get along and not be in agreement on things that really matter. And right now, more than ever, I think having these conversations are immensely important, especially because journalism is a dying industry, as you know. And we need to support it in a way that, you know, appreciates what real...
It's not a dying industry. What he means is that it's not getting any support and it's not getting any financial love and it is not able to be self-sustaining in a manner that we would like it to be. That's what he means.
Not true
that
investigative journalism.
Right. Not that it doesn't exist.
Yes.
But that we're just not getting access to it and it's not being financed. That's what he means.
Yeah. It's subscribe to my Substack. It's certainly evolving.
And what is that Substack?
Yeah, let's put that up. Yeah.
Yeah. EOINHIGGINS.substack.com. But I think that what we're looking at as far as like journalism is like, it's not so much that it's dying, it's that the old modes are dying and the new modes are still being born. And like, these are like the birthing pains of basically that going on. And that may go on for a little while.
That's a very good,
you know, like, because look, it's been like 20, 30 years. That's a longish time, but if you look at it from like a historical context, it's not really that long.
Very, very good.
No, and I just want to tell people, remind people, support people that are really trying to investigate information. It's really important because the people that you're probably watching on TV, like people that watch mainstream media, those are not people that are gathering information. Those are stenographers.
For the most part, yeah.
right? Mm-hmm. Like that's not, so it's really important to know at least that, you know, support the people that are trying to get the real information.
That's for sure. Oh, and is there anything that you're working on right now that you want anybody to know about? Guys, obviously subscribe to his Substack. It's free. So, and if you want to support his work, you can obviously contribute financially, I would assume.
Some of them are paywalled. Like the more like in-depth stuff is paywall, but a lot of it is free. What am I working on right now? I'm working with Bolts Magazine on a piece about progressive DA in Boston, or the now departed progressive DA and her replacement. I'm working on a comic book related story actually for Polygon. That's way outside of my normal thing, but that's a lot of fun that we're doing.
Your husband's my husband, but it's you, comic books.
And trading cards. So it's kind of like a little history thing. Nice. And as far as the newsletter, you know, I'm always looking for stories. If you're watching this or listening to this and you have any story that you think that I should be checking out, please let me know. I have a pretty big story coming about what life is like for trans people in Britain. That's probably like the big thing that I have coming up. But honestly, like right now, it is mostly just all Ukraine all the time. On Wednesday, I'm going to be talking to a historian of nuclear power and also a member of Global Zero, which is the group that is devoted to like zeroing down nuclear weapons. And it's just going to be a big talk about nukes and nuclear war, because not only is that something I think we should be talking about right now, but some of the things that I've seen some of these people write have kind of like walked me back from the cliff a little bit. And so I'm hoping that like we can, because I don't know about you guys, but like Saturday, Sunday, I was bugging out. Like I was extremely stressed.
That's unfortunate. I know a lot of people that feel like that, get like that on this. I just feel like we've been through this before in so many different ways. Like it's just so hard to, I don't know. I just feel like it's such posturing and it's just a whole bunch of rich people playing Stratego. And all I'm thinking about is that there's moms just trying to keep their kids alive in places like Russia and the Ukraine, just like there are here. And it's very hard for me to find any sort of like animosity or opinion other than like that this is only going to hurt innocent people. Like that's
right. But the thing about Stratego is though, that if you like hit the wrong piece, you blow up.
Yeah. It's true.
You know, like it's a little, I don't know. I tend to like catastrophize. I kind of like, you know, like I just, my brain just spins into things and like imagines like worst case scenarios. But anyway,
that's where can people catch that interview? Is that on your Substack?
That's going to be on my call-in podcast. It's the Flashpoint podcast. If you just go to my Twitter account, both my newsletter and the podcast are right there. So you can just subscribe.
Yeah, it's the Flashpoint.
Both are the Flashpoint.
And that's
at EOI underscore. Yeah. At EOINHIGGINS underscore.
Okay. So one more time, the Twitter handle is.
The Twitter handle is EOIN HIGGINS underscore.
Underscore.
Yeah. On Twitter.
Yeah. Guys, follow them, guys,
if you're not already. Obviously, you know, this is sort of the real world. This is a podcast, and we're having a fruitful conversation. And hopefully we can have it again. I think we are, you know, like I said, we need to be cross-pollinating.
We love to cross-pollinate.
Owen, thank you so much. Excellent work, guys. Subscribe to his Substack, support his work if you can. And we certainly hope to be chatting with you again soon, brother.
Thanks, Owen.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Have a great evening.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'd like to think that one of the things that we offer is like a glimpse into different, like more specific things. So like somebody now who's watching this can then go watch further and learn more about that by following him.
Right.
And we're sort of like a jumping off point for a lot of good different journalists. That's what I would like to do. These are people that are speaking with experts and speaking with people that are on the ground in places like Ukraine. So it's important to support their work. And I would also to point out that something I do remember, I don't remember a lot from the early campaign days, like at this point, but it was really early on. And I went on something with him. He was somebody who interviewed me. I'm not sure if he did it for a written piece. I can't remember exactly, but he is somebody that interviewed me very early on in the campaign. And at that time, he had been the nicest. And at that time, he was, had been the nicest person basically to me other than
Mike
Figueredo. But Mike was, I might have even been after that.
Yeah.
Owen came after that first thing that we, do you remember what's his name? I'm not going to say his name. So.
Boy, that's a long time ago.
I know, but Owen was, I was, and I hadn't heard of him and I was a little hesitant and I'm like, okay. And you, you must have said,
Jen, how dare you run for that seat?
He, you must have said, oh, he's fine.
I didn't make that mistake again.
Well, no, but then I was kind of curious when I was going to go see this Owen. And then he was just really nice. He's very like even keeled. He's very reasonable. Again, these are good qualities in a journalist.
He does like to needle. I've noticed on social media, he does like to needle like,
who's he go after?
Usually like, you know, Jimmy and people like that.
Good, so, whatever.
Mona, you wouldn't, we can't say the person's name. It's not a big.
No. It's somebody nobody would even know of. I think that there's like one person that follows this person.
Yeah, there was, there was basically somebody who spent
nobody
like,
would even know.
This is like one of her first, the first person to interview Jen was Jordan Sherry.
Yes.
That's Jordan where, was my first that's interview. Where she announced her campaign. And I thought it was appropriate. Jordan's a friend. And so that was important.
But then a local
like
guy,
almost like right afterwards, this guy who we will not name. Interviewed Jen and basically spent the entire time talking about why are you running for Tim Canova's seat?
That I was somehow interfering with the great like, Tim.
Oh my God.
He was like a complete Tim sycophant. But anyway, so yeah, it is nobody that anybody would know of, but it was just kind of funny. And so then one of my soon interviews after that was with Owen. And I don't know how or why or whatever you connected it, but he was really nice. And I remember thinking, oh, that's nice. Somebody could be nice. I mean, Jordan excluded. I was, you know.
Yes. And with that said, we really appreciate you guys. We're going to have obviously a very huge show Yes.
So you, okay. So that's somebody who follows Owen.
Yes.
Again, cross-pollination is a really important thing, guys.
I agree. What and do you we guys got to put these petty, stupid differences aside.
It's really old, people. It's really, really old.
You know? So.
What did I do with that joke? Yeah, here it is.
So with that said, we will see
what
you
do we
guys
have coming up?
On Wednesday.
Okay.
CJ Peterson from the Iowa Democrats. Very important conversation about banning fracking in the state of Iowa. Now more than ever in lieu of this IPCC report about the climate crisis. It is immensely important that we have that conversation. And if that's not enough, we've got a really
special. Okay, this pleases me because I like him.
Yes.
I like him so much.
Jen has, I think Jen and Harvey K have this.
I just think
is it a Jewish thing?
I don't know, but he's, you know what it is? He's like, I think when I think of him, I think of people like, I think of Paul Wellstone. Like he's one of these like just real good guys, like just wants to teach the right things. He's a socialist. Like I don't know.
So
I just dig
on, So on Wednesday, we will have CJ Peterson from the Iowa Democrats and then Tom Hartman to come on talking about the history of Big Brother.
People, I'm telling you,
next,
bring your Xanax to that
next
one.
Next Monday, we are going to have a mini panel, which will be a lot of fun. Harvey K is returning, only this time he's bringing Alan Minsky to the trip. And that's going to be a very interesting conversation that we are very much looking forward to having. So we hope you guys have enjoyed the show. Jen's getting high and I'm getting high as a result because
I feel like I have to use this because otherwise it won't get used.
Fair enough. That's a good excuse to puff, right? So with that
I mean, it's from the weed truck.
We did the show in an hour and a half. I love it. Let's keep it at that time. I think that's a right amount of time. Not too much, not too little. We'll see you guys on Wednesday.
Thanks for watching. If you want to support our mission to transform politics into service, please like this video, subscribe, follow us on social media, and consider joining our Patreon, where you'll get early access to our interviews as well as other exclusive content. Links are in the description. Peace out.